Welcome to Studio A at Interlochen Public Radio. I'm Amanda Sewell. We're delighted to have two guests with us in the studio today to discuss this weekend's Traverse Symphony Orchestra Wagner Gala Concert. Kevin Rhodes is here. He's the music director and conductor of the TSO. Hi, Kevin.
Good morning, Amanda.
And we are also glad to welcome soprano Othelie Graham, who will be the guest artist appearing with the TSO this weekend. Hi, Othelie. Welcome to Interlochen Public Radio.
Good morning, Amanda. I'm thrilled to be here.
And what we're doing today is Kevin and Othelie are going to take us on a short guided tour of some of the music that will be performed on this Sunday's All Wagner concert. And Kevin is at the piano to help us out with some of that. So where should we start?
Well, you know, I say let's start with Tristan. Tristan and Isolde. That is the second block on our program. We begin with some Tannhäuser, and that's very straightforward stuff. But the second block is from Tristan and Isolde, the prelude and the Liebestod, the love death, as it's called in English. And this is such an incredibly important work in the history of music. I thought that'd be a good place to start chatting.
Sounds good. And it's because of that one darn chord.
Well, it is. and this chord, let's talk about that chord since you bring that up. I'll start right with it. So this is an amazing chord. Just have a listen to the chord on its own. So it is a combination of these four notes that in and of themselves sound just like a nice chord. Why not? But several things. In music, how you get to a chord was traditionally very, very important. There were sort of rules that developed over time through the era of Bach and all of his contemporaries, through Mozart, Beethoven, etc., etc. And so each successive generation of composers tried to break out of those rules. And the guy who broke out the most majorly the first was Wagner. So this piece begins with the famous phrase. Okay, which we associate with one of our characters, and then coupled with. So these two themes, these two, as Wagner called them, leitmotifs, leading motives in English, intertwine in a very special way. So I'm going to play these two themes in context, how they overlap with each other. Music could go anywhere from this point. It could move to a new key. He stays right there to start the next phrase. And again. Slightly elongated. It's like the music asks us the question, where are we going? Just those last notes again. And again. And then finally, like a big passionate embrace, the music explodes. hear how it just keeps slip sliding to new keys and new places, always searching for a place to land. Just like a love which was never meant to be. As later on in West Side Story, they'd say, looking for a place for us. There in the bass of the orchestra, you hear the fate motif. Keep hearing little hints of those opening Tristan chords all the way. You see, it just keeps trying to find resolution. The music, just like the plot of the opera. And on it goes.
And you mentioned there's a lack of resolution. And if you see this on the stage, there's no resolution for 4 hours.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And to, you know, and to just put this in a hard and dry context, except for Wagner, everybody was finishing their arias in the course of operas with, you know, regularly throughout the evening, you know. Totally normal. You'd hear it 100 times in every opera Verdi was writing at that moment. But Wagner was writing, as he and everyone else said, the music of the future.
Yeah, and
absolutely.
We're not going to find a book of Wagner arias for mezzo-soprano the way we would for Verdi or Mozart, because Wagner does not lend himself to, you know, those nice excerptable arias. So the music from Tristan you folks are doing on Sunday, we're sort of getting the beginning and the end of the opera. We're skipping about 3.5 hours of the...
Yes, exactly. And what's fascinating is that Wagner did that himself before the piece was actually produced. So that's kind of a nice and sort of rare thing that we have from him saying, putting these two parts of the piece together is okay. And this is also a magical transition between the end of the prelude and the Liebestod, the love death, the aria, if you will.
Yeah, the one that we get.
The one that we can excerpt.
And right. It's right at the end of the opera.
Exactly. Right. So the music for the prelude finally dies out after all these Tristani... And then we hear in the bottom of the orchestra a theme which is associated with the sea, which, since the piece begins on a boat, I suppose that makes sense. And then... two little pizzicatos in the bass. And then. Mm-hmm. This music, likewise, is always searching for a resting place, taking us through unbelievable keys. And on it goes, just full super romanticism in its highest form, and it finally reaches a resolution at the very concluding passages. Time. And then finally,
say Othley and I just each sighed.
We both just heaved with the, like, the biggest. Exactly.
The whole thing. Othley, what is it like singing over that?
It's truly the most, it's a gift. It's truly the most wonderful thing to be able to sing that music. When I was young, I always tell a little funny story that when I was younger and I had my first car, I had a cassette of Tristan and Isolde, as well as Gode Dumrung, and I used to blast.
Wait, how many cassettes was that?
Several. Okay. It was a whole pack of cassettes, and I used to blast the immolation scene, and I was that kid, and the big love death and the Liebestod, and to stand on stage with an orchestra and sing it is sometimes truly overwhelming, and to have a conductor like Maestro is every singer's dream.
Oh, thank
really.
You.
Really. No, I mean, he is truly a singer's conductor. If he asked me to, I always make a joke with him that if he asked me to sing in his backyard, I'd be there.
Now, have you two worked together before this concert on
Sunday?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yes, indeed. Yeah, this is, it's actually only our third concert production together, but it already feels like we have known each other a lifetime. But it was the instant we met, and I played a chord and she started singing, and we were just immediately enthralled with working with each other.
Absolutely. We had a rehearsal for a completely different work, and when he walked in, he sat down and played a little bit of Die Schwarzhalle, and he played from memory, and I started singing, and that's how it started.
And it was a professional connection, it much like the love connection.
Exactly. Well, singers always have their favorite conductors, so, you know, yes.
Wow. Good to know. We are in Studio A at Interlaken Public Radio with Othley Graham and Kevin Rhodes talking about this Sunday afternoon's Traverse Symphony Orchestra concert featuring an all Wagner program. And Kevin, you mentioned that there's going to be the Tannhäuser Overture, which I believe most people will know as "We Turn My Wav," right? That's the
yes, but we are not playing the overture to Tannhäuser. We're playing the entrance of the guests from Act Two. We're not doing the overture. That would just kind of extend our program. We'd be in danger of running into overtime.
It is a Wagner program,
right? Exactly. But no, we're doing the entrance of the guests, which is, I don't have it in front of me here, but the and even though in the opera first Elisabeth sings Die Teure Halle, there's a little hi hello between other guys who are coming in, and then all the guests come in for the big song contest. Well, it works very conveniently in concert to just sort of reverse that. Start with those trumpet fanfares, the entrance of the guests, and then arrives our soprano, our Elisabeth form. dich teure Halle, grüß ich wieder, Frau, grüß ich dich, geliebter Hans, etc.
Well, and it's,
pardon this me, is I him, won't be singing
this,
that.
This is him proving that he doesn't need me at all.
Right. You're released from your contract.
I am released.
Now. Well, and speaking of being mindful of the audience's time, you're also doing selections from Götterdämmerung.
Exactly. And that is the whole second half of the concert. Well, we have a little, because you just can't do a Wagner concert without having the Ride of the Walküres, which is from Walküre, Die Walküre. But then the meat of the second half, the position of the symphony, if you will, is three big excerpts from Götterdämmerung, The Twilight of the Gods.
Yes.
And we should say Götterdämmerung is the fourth and final of the Ring cycle. Götterdämmerung itself is 5-ish hours.
It'll take you a while to get through that
depending
song.
Depending on how
long. A little
long.
Bit of time to get through that one.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
It's, you know, I mean, you know when the piece is most often done with a dinner break that you're talking about a big affair. And it is.
I was asking a conductor recently who's just been engaged to conduct that if he would need to wear one of those camelback things so he could hydrate as he was conducting the entire opera. And of course, it's the culmination of the four opera Ring cycle, which in itself is 25 hours.
25, 26
in total.
Hours.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
So, but you're going to give us the Cliff's Notes version, exactly. I suppose, on the concert stage on Sunday. So, walk us through a little bit of the selections that the audience will be hearing Sunday.
So we start with, from the first act, Siegfried's Rhine Journey, which is where he leaves Brunhilde up there on the, is it the rock or the mountainside, or is it the rock on the mountainside? In any event, he leaves
depends
her.
Depends on the translation.
Right, go down, get on that Rhine and go somewhere and seek his fortune, etc., etc. And so this excerpt begins with one of the main themes associated with Siegfried. And I suppose at this point it's really important to talk about just what this whole leitmotif, leading motif, what this means. And the simplest way to put it in context for folks who haven't studied this the way us musicians have is that wonderful cultural touchstone of Star Wars. John Williams completely took over, and he, you know, I mean, it was, you know, it's not like he, you know, didn't admit that he was following this. He totally did. Took over the concept of associating a theme with each character, perhaps situations, perhaps even props. So you have themes for Brunhilde, the lead Valkyrie. You have themes for Siegfried. You've got a theme for his sword. You've got a theme for a magic disappearing helmet. You've got a theme for a ring. And then as the story goes on, he weaves those all together. So just the way when you're watching in Star Wars, and someone is talking about something, maybe some little bit of danger might come their way, or maybe it won't even, maybe they're not even talking about that, but you'll hear in the background, dun, 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 you know that Darth Vader and the bad guys are lurking in the background. So that's sort of the whole concept of Wagner and his leading motifs. So we start off with Siegfried's horn call, which is, I think, probably something, the theme itself will be very familiar to folks. I've got to get my glasses back on now. I always keep taking them off to look at you across the room, and then I need them to play the piano. One more time. And then we get a theme associated with Brunhilde from the previous opera. I should say a theme associated with Brunhilde as Siegfried's love, not Brunhilde on her own. So you see, that's a perfect example. Brunhilde, of course, has all of her music, which is Valkyrie-related. Right? Related to that. But then she has certain themes which are her in love. So Brunhilde as Valkyrie, Brunhilde as heroine. And all of this builds up. And, you know, the great thing about, or the important thing about listening to Wagner and listening to this music is to not be put off by, or concerned, or worried about the complexity of it. The important thing is to respond in the absolute natural way to the notes that you're hearing. And by that, I just simply mean, and I give a couple examples. That's a happy chord. That's a sad chord. If you hear this, you know we're talking about good stuff. You hear that, you know we're talking about bad stuff. And if you hear this, we're not sure what we're talking about. It could be good, or it could be bad. It could go either way. That's the wonder of the diminished chord, without which Wagner would have been lost. And a diminished chord, which is, of course, quite related to, we build that up differently, and we get it diminished. Okay, anyway, so back to Siegfried on his Rhine journey. Now you tell me, is something good or something bad gonna happen when he goes down that Rhine? Something bad. But he doesn't know it yet. On goes his journey down the Rhine. Eventually, when he gets to the Rhine, we actually hear the music for the Rhine, which we heard first all the way at the beginning of this whole affair, at the very beginning of Rheingold, at the beginning of the first opera. So we know he's on the Rhine, and eventually we'll hear the muse of the theme associated with the Rhine gold, the gold of the Rhine, which was turned into the ring of the ring cycle, and gold, the ring, representing material wealth, representing money, representing the root of all evil, which is kind of an interesting thing because Wagner was very interested in money. So it kind of sounds like he's making a statement about something, but actually I think it was just good drama. As far as he was concerned. Anyway, so we hear that
Rhine
gold
theme.
He knew
it would sell well.
Exactly.
Rhine gold.
I don't think that's in it, is it?
No.
Okay, so that all eventually dies down and calms down. And in the context of what we are doing, we go next into the Siegfried's funeral march.
Yeah, we jump ahead, 2.5 hours or so.
Exactly. So we get Siegfried on his Rhine, and then we're just going to jump ahead to what happened once he was there. You know, it's kind of like this, on last week's episode of The Ring. There's some between music that is very atmospheric. One of our important themes. Which has to do with the tragedy of the race of people to whom he belongs. And this is all complex stuff. But in any event, we won't worry about that too much. It's a gloomy, dark theme and sets the mood. We arrive at the actual funeral march itself. And eventually we get one of the themes associated with Siegfried. All very dark and gloomy. However, in the course of this, that theme that was associated with the tragedy of his folk eventually transforms And then we hear the theme for the sword, which is the symbol of his strength, the symbol of his power, and that is this one. And And that sword leads us to a major, i.e. happy version of that funeral march in major. So we're not too happy, because he did die after all. And on it goes. This also eventually dies down, and then we land in the very concluding moments of the opera, where we've had lots of back and forth about Siegfried being killed, how he's killed, who's betrayed whom, yada, yada, yada. Oh my God, it's the ultimate soap opera. But he's dead, and Brunhilde is there as our remaining heroine. She knows what she has to do. She knows that she has to sacrifice herself in conjunction with him through his funeral pyre, that this will be the end of the gods, the twilight of the gods that the title is speaking about. The ring should go back to the Rhine, from the gold from which it came. The world will be purified through her sacrifice, through his sacrifice, and a new age will dawn without the gods, I think. So, no, that's a joke. I do. So, we get one of our fate motifs to introduce us into this music. And then some music initially to start this, which is kind of reminiscent of some of the themes that we've had associated with the gods over the time. I'll talk a little bit more about that in just a moment, but it's just sort of a stately, noble theme. It has a touch of funeral march about it, and this is the music in the orchestra over which Brunhilde tells everyone to build the funeral pyre high on the river, etc., etc. Shortly thereafter, we hear the music that we heard first back in that Rheingold, associated with the god Loge, the god of fire. And of course, since we're going to build a funeral fire, the god of fire is going to be very important. And here's some of his music entering into the orchestra. Coupled with Siegfried's motif in the bottom of the orchestra and the brass. All right, so then after a while, all of that fades out. And a theme associated with love, the delight of love, some have called it. And she sings about like a ray of sun, his face was, his smile was. It was all wonderful, beautiful, 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 until she begins to talk about his betrayal. And that theme has to do with faithfulness and a betrayal of that faithfulness, which others have done to Siegfried. Siegfried, without knowing it, has done it to Brunhilde. Like I said, it's all my children, right? In German.
But with magic.
We hear a theme associated with the death. Oh, sorry. the tail end of which is one of our fate motifs. And since we're going to talk about fate in this moment and a fate motifs, who's responsible for all of this? Those gods, that Votan, the lead god who got the giants to build his incredible castle and didn't want to pay. And that theme we first heard also way back at the beginning of the drama. Then the music continues on and she's talking about how he was betrayed, how he was put in this impossible situation. And you hear a music in the bottom of the orchestra while she's singing that was initially associated with this contract that Votan made with the giants to build his castle that he reneged on. And so that contract is still hovering as the root of all of our problems. Along with fate, that contract again, etc., etc. The curse motive comes in at important points. And then a little Rheingold. She's telling the gods, after I do this, you will have no choice but to rest in internal sleep. The Valhalla motif. And eventually these chords. And again, that stately music that she asked for the funeral pyre to be built. Then we hear the theme associated with the downfall of the gods. Now, notice how that music is coming literally down. So, twilight going down, he writes a motif that goes down. Now, I point that out specifically in this moment because what follows right on the heels of that is a motif, again, associated with the Rhine, which is going to purify everything, which is going to cleanse everything, metaphorically bring everything back up to an elevated level. So, after the twilight, you then have the arise. All of this just in three measures in while Brunhilde takes a little pause to rest her voice. Then the Rhine. And she sings a bit, but then she talks about that ring that was the thing that got it all going bad. That's a motive again associated with the ring we heard long time ago. And then she's going to give that gold back to the Rhine, back to the Rhine maidens who live in the Rhine and are sort of the delicate watchers over of the gold and all of these sorts of things. And on it goes. Well, eventually, we get to the final section where she's like, okay, now it's time. I'm riding into that fire. We're almost to the end. And that whole section begins again with that contract motif, leads into the fire motif. And just listen how this is so wonderfully put together. There's our fire motif. You'll hear all of these motifs again and again. The big climax. More fire. at the end, of course, the famous Valkyrie motif, meaning she's on the move. And our last new melody is the melody associated with the idea of redemption through love. Combined with Siegfried's motive. Oh, sorry for the wrong note. Valkyrie motif again. And on it goes. Then eventually the singing is all over and there's wonderful description in Wagner's music of what should happen on the stage, much of which, almost none of which happens in productions today. But we come back to the Rhine music because that is what is going to purify us all. And then the music associated with the gods and their castle, Valhalla. And then over that, the redemption by love theme. And the rest, you'll just have to come in here on Sunday at 3 o'clock.
Oh, you're leaving us hanging, just like Wagner.
Yeah, you see what I did there?
Yes. Well, it's so interesting because, Athalie, you will be joining the orchestra for these two scenes. And they're both the final scenes of these operas and the... You know, there's this sort of trope in opera that, oh, guess what? The woman's going to die at the end. But like with Wagner characters, these with Isolde and with Brunhilde, it's not that kind of death. It's like this redemption, you know, they're sort of saving the world.
Always, always, yes, always powerful women.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know,
no victims here.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, and in Wagner's own life, and I suppose in the life of many men, many people are looking for someone to save them. And in Wagner's mind, and in the mind of many 19th century of philosophers, the eternal woman, die ewige Frau, this was how we were all going to be redeemed and saved, right? A very different concept than many of the Old Testament Bible concepts of women, which were meaning, oh, you know, you ate the apple, it's all your fault. so we have something different going here in this mythology. And how these... You know, so it's not, you know, the poor battered woman who got killed at the end. No. It's the woman who decided she is the one who can, through her sacrifice, make everything great again. Or through her sacrifice, transform and be with her beloved in heaven or the spirit world or wherever they imagine themselves to be. Yeah.
Exactly. Get on that horse and ride into the fire.
Yeah. In her own agency.
Exactly. Absolutely.
You know, accept the arranged marriage or choose to be with the person you really love.
Absolutely.
So, Athalie, this is interesting because the folks in the audience will effectively be witnessing you die musically.
Several times.
Twice, at least, on Sunday. How do you sort of prepare for that?
Well, vocally, I mean, I've sung this music a few times before, but emotionally, I always find it a little difficult, even just with maestro playing. You always have that feeling in your stomach because you know what is happening with the character, and to be and this Sunday, as we discussed, it'll be a little different looking. I will be literally surrounded by the orchestra. As opposed to, you know, just being next to him, I'll be able to, you know, look at his face and really look out into the audience, but to hear and be enveloped in the orchestra, which in this music, I'm sure will be truly, for me, overwhelming. And tonight's first rehearsal, I'll get the opportunity to do that. But you, as a singer, this is very big music. but it's also beautiful music. And I find that it's always better, even though my voice is naturally an incredibly large instrument, which lends itself to this great music and to some of the big Puccini girls that I've done, and the Verdi girls that I'm coming up to do as well. But I focus more on vocal beauty than power. And I find that that also gives you longevity as a singer. And it's also a lot more feminine. These are still beautiful, even though they're strong women. They're beautiful women, and I think it's important to bring out the contrast in the powerful music, also with vocal beauty, with a voice that carries, and is carried by the orchestra.
Yeah, I would imagine it's quite a challenge singing with an enormous Wagnerian orchestra, but trying to be large enough to carry over that, but also not just bellowing.
Yes, you certainly never want to do that.
Well, and you know, there's also, you know, the music in the orchestra is oftentimes very, very rhythmic and very accented. Of course, it has lush moments, but in much of this, there's a lot going on, and I'm always suggesting to singers in these moments, don't be swayed by the orchestra to start punching and accenting with your voice. You have to be the contrast to that. Ignore that. Just sing this beautiful line that soars over it all. Because once you start to try to punch like the orchestra, then you're in competition with them. And that's a competition that even the largest voice will not win. It only works when it is the right contrast to that orchestra.
It's a wonderful ability that, you know, in with really lush, big orchestras, Wagnerian orchestras, you know, that sort of thing, that you literally ride above the orchestra. And there's no need to, you know, sort of dig in and try to compete. I mean, there's a lot of beautiful, soft singing. I do a lot of pianissimo singing, which is also a wonderful thing to be able to do, especially in contrast with that big orchestra.
Well, the Traverse Symphony Orchestra is presenting its Fire and Fury Wagner Gala Concert this Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock in Corson Auditorium in Interlaken. For more information and tickets, visit traversesymphony.org. Kevin Rhodes and Athalie Graham, thank you so much for joining us today in Studio A at Interlaken Public Radio.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, thank you so much, Amanda. Great to be here.
This edition of Studio A was engineered by Brock Moorman. Thanks to Gary Gatsky, Linda Osborne, and Nessa Butler for additional support. I'm Amanda Sewell. Thanks for listening.